Okay, let's get this going. I obviously want to start by thanking again all the patrons who are supporting the show on Patreon. I probably will do something a little bit extra. Maybe I'll do like a quick Yigirus Ramban series for those people, just so they can feel even more special than they actually are. But very much appreciated. And I will again also, I think it's valuable for you guys if you put your screens on. Obviously, not everybody can do that, but if you have your screens on and everybody can see each other, like I said again, I'm not looking, but it's good for you guys to see each other. I think it creates a good sense of community and chevra. Okay, let's talk Parshas Korach. Now, obviously, Parshas Korach, right, this week's Parsha in Chutz La'aretz. Machlokas is obviously the big theme here with the big fight between Korach and Moshe, but that's what we're going to spend most of our time on, obviously. Excuse me, but there is other things that we can kind of nitpick here in the text and bring out some nice ideas as well. So just again, to recap and quickly run through the Parsha, Korach basically decides that he's done with Moshe and Aaron as the leader. He wants to be the leader, so he kind of gathers up support. He says, "All right, everybody, let's go. We're going to go complain." Right? He goes to complain to Moshe. Moshe says, "Hey, come on, you guys are Levium. This is, you guys have already are very special." Korach obviously is not interested in that response. Moshe goes to fight and with Dathan and Avir, goes to appease really Dathan and Aviram, who also are fighting with him, and they're not interested. So Moshe says, "Okay, no problem. Everybody, tomorrow, everybody's coming back here. All you, Korach, and your 250 people, you're coming back. You're bringing Ketores. You're going to offer. You want to be the Kohen Gadol? Great. You and Aaron. Everybody's bringing the Ketores, like the Kohen Gadol does. And oh, by the way, there's only one person who's going to make it out of there alive, pretty much. The only one person who can bring the Ketores. Good luck." He hoped, basically, Moshe hoped that he would kind of push him off until tomorrow. And basically, they called his bluff and they showed up, and Moshe got all upset. And Dathan and Aviram, they walk out very, very angrily and haughty, and they say, "We're not interested." So Moshe basically davens to Kosh Baruch Hu, and as you know, the ground swallows up not only Korach, but all of his kids and all of his money and all of his possessions, etc., etc. And then obviously, all the people who brought Ketores get burned, and Aaron obviously is left alive. And the Bnei Yisrael come back after that. This is again the more underrated parts of the parsha towards the end. Bnei Yisrael come back and complain to Moshe and Aaron, "Hey, you're killing Jews." That's literally what it says. And Moshe and Aaron are like, "What do you mean we're killing Jews?" And he said, "Yeah, why did you suggest they were going to bring the Ketores? You knew they weren't going to make it. Why did you tell them to bring Ketores?" So Hashem is obviously furious, and he sends a plague. And of course, Moshe sends Aaron out with a pan of Ketores, and with the Midrashim, it's not the Psukim, but with the Midrashim, they explain that basically Aaron and the Ketores stop the Malach HaMavis in the middle of the camp and brings them back to Moshe, and they basically stop the plague, and the Ketores, which started the whole thing, stops the plague. And at the end of the parsha, right, Hashem wants to send an even greater kind of proof that He has chosen Moshe and Aaron and the Levim, etc. He says, "All right, everybody, every Shevet brings a stick, and we're going to put all these sticks in the Aron Kodesh or in the Kodesh Kadashim. And in the morning, Aaron's stick had shkedim and flowers, with almonds and flowers, right, to show that Kosh Baruch Hu had actually picked the Levim and the Kohanim." And then the end of the parsha ends up with Matnos Kehuna, some gifts that go to the Kohen, etc. But let's dive with that little background. Let's dive in to the parsha. So basically, first, before we get to the whole machlokas thing, because that's obviously the crux of what we're going to talk about, the first pasuk brings in someone who I'm always fascinated by. When the Torah introduces new characters, the Torah here mentions one person who is mentioned once in Tanakh and never mentioned again. Pasuk says at the beginning, first pasuk in the parsha, "Vayikach Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kehath ben Levi." Korach, okay, this guy took, right, "V'dasan v'aviram ben Eliyav," right, Dathan and Aviram, who again Moshe has fought with before in Mitzrayim, "V'on ben Peles," this guy On ben Peles. Who is this guy, On ben Peles? The Torah does not mention him ever again. So the Gemara explains, the Gemara and Sanhedrin, and Daf Kuvtes, explains and contrasts the difference between two wives. On the one hand, Korach's wife, which the Gemara explains, dragged him down and kind of fed into his ego and his decision to rebel against Moshe, and On's wife. Anybody familiar with On's wife? Anybody familiar with that story at all? The only person with a screen on is Yeti, so I'm going to assume that's a no. No, okay, Kaelin, also no. Okay, says the Gemara, fascinating. Says the Gemara, Om came home, is like, all right, we're rebelling against Moshe. And his wife was like, what does that mean? And he's like, well, yeah, Korach, you know, he's getting these people together. So, and you know, we're going to kind of, you know, overthrow him. And so Om's wife was like, I understand. If Moshe's the leader, so you're his student. And if Korach's the leader, you're also his student. So what's in it for you? So Owen was like, yeah, that's a fair point, but I already committed, so I'm going tomorrow morning. There's the whole thing, right? Ketores, etc. So Owen's wife said, I gotcha. Don't worry about it. What happens is, the Gemara says, she got him drunk. He fell asleep. And then, in the morning, when Korach's people came to take Owen with him, right, to kind of get him, she sat outside her tent, uncovered her hair, and then when they saw her, they were like, no, and they left. And that's how Owen didn't get sucked into the whole scheme, and that's how Owen's wife saved his life. And so, first of all, the first thing that jumps off the page, obviously, when you read that Gemara, is how important a wife is. Is that the wife is Koveya, right? We've mentioned this many times in Samir, and I'm sure you've heard it from many teachers, but the wife is Koveya. The wife is Koveya, the religious attitude in the home, right? Again, what she wants, she's going to, obviously, if a husband is not Shayach, obviously, that's... we're talking about two people who are comparable, and she is going to either bring up and encourage or bring down, right? The wife is the koveya. That's very clearly the simple lesson of the Gemara. But the other lesson of the Gemara, which I like to point out, is fascinating, is that how far have we fallen as a society, when in terms of tznius. Think about what the Gemara said. What happened? She sat outside, she uncovered her hair. And now, who are these people who are coming to kind of talk to Owen? These are people who are rebelling against Moshe Rabbeinu. These are not the greatest tzaddikim of all time, although Chazal do talk about Korach as being a tremendous human being. But these are people who are rebelling against Moshe Rabbeinu. And they turn the corner, and there, oh my gosh, there's a woman who is uncovering her hair. And not only did they just like kind of like call to Owen from a distance, they immediately turned around and left. Right? We don't even, doesn't even register that behavior, being sensitive to that type of tznius, does not even register in our minds. Right? We are so, these are not the greatest tzaddikim of the generation, but they are not even willing to kind of spend a moment with a woman whose hair is uncovered, a married woman whose hair is uncovered, because that was the sensitivity that they had in terms of tznius, in terms of respecting boundaries between different families. So just, I always like to point out, just to realize how that doesn't even like register in our brain until someone points it out, that was something that that they obviously held dear, even though they were rebelling against Moshe Rabbeinu. They thought that was obviously a value. Okay, Vaitra, let's talk about Machlokas. Machlokas, obviously, arguments, fights, obviously, this is the crux of the Parsha. The fact that Machlokas is so terrible is illustrated all over the place. Just to bring two of them. The Medrash at the beginning of the Parsha and the Yerushalmi in Peah, the Medrash in Noach, points out a distinction between, well, let's do one and then the other. Both of them are the same point. The one you're more familiar with is in Parshas Noach, which is the flood and the Dor HaMabul, right? The generation of the flood that you're familiar with, right? Flood, what was the sin of the generation of the flood? Hamas, they were stealing from each other, a societal breakdown, right? People were stealing less than Shavah Pruta, right? Kosh Baruch Hu, right? For whatever reason, the richest, the evil had gotten to a point where Kosh Baruch Hu destroyed them. Tower of Bavel is the story at the end of Parshas Noach, where they decided to build a tower, simple shot, to rebel against Kosh Baruch Hu. What happened to them? They got dispersed throughout the entire world. And says the Medrash, and says, you know, everybody, I don't understand. If you had to tell me, which group of people would you think would get wiped out by Kosh Baruch Hu? The people who decided to build a tower and fight a war against him, right? That would be what I would say. And the people who were stealing from each other, okay, right? Fine, society had kind of like a breakdown in morals. I wouldn't necessarily have killed all of them myself. I would have probably spread them out, maybe done exactly what Hashem did to the Dor HaFlaga, to the Tower of Bavel people. But no, it's the reverse. Even though you would think that the capital punishment should have been for the door of the Tower of Bavel, the Dor HaFlaga. So what is it? So Chazal explained, yeah, because the people who were building the Tower of Bavel were united. Pasuk goes out of its way to say that clearly. They were not united. Dvarim Machadim, they were of one mind. And when people are united, even if it's in an evil cause, Kosh Baruch Hu respects that. We'll talk about Shalom at the end. Right? But it's much worse when people are fighting with each other and there's machlokas all over the place and society breaks down and people can't get along with each other. That is much worse. And the Kosh Baruch Hu had no choice but to bring a flood to destroy them. Right? Fascinating contrast. The one that you're maybe a little bit less familiar with is the stories in Tanakh. That the Yerushalmi and Peah, the Medrash at the beginning of the Parsha, compares two different kings of Israel. One you know, David HaMelech. And one you may know also is Achav HaRasha. Achav was a terrible Rasha, right? Fought with Eliyahu HaNavi. Again, his wife Yizevel was pretty horrible. But the Gemara says fascinating. So the people in the generation of David HaMelech, he said the kids in the Beis Medrash, the kids who were learning Torah, could argue a point whether something was Tameh or Tahor, could argue 49 ways one way and 49 ways the other way. They were tremendous geniuses and steeped in Torah, yet there was tremendous amount of machlokas and war and death and death during war. But in the days of Achav, since everybody was united and worshipping Avodah Zarah, as crazy as that is, the language the Gemara uses is Daltorin, or the Medrash uses is Daltorin. They weren't quarrelsome, as I guess this is a bad translation, but they weren't fighting with each other. They would go out to war and they would be victorious and they would not have, too many losses. What was the difference? The difference was Shalom. The difference was Machlokas. And Machlokas is the worst, maybe the worst of all evils. Rashi in the Parsha also quotes another Medrash that says that Beis Din, it's fascinating that if you notice the Psukim, what happened when the ground swallowed up Korach and all of his fam? It literally the entire family, right? Kids, little kids, possessions. Usually, says Rashi, says the Medrash, Beis Din punishes from the age of 13, right? Beis Din Shalmalash and Shemayim, right? Doesn't punish until a person is 20, right? But here the Torah goes out of its way to show that the children got punished. And lesson number one is simply that children, why in the world would a Kosh Baruch Hu punish children? So lesson number one aspect is that very often children bear the brunt of adult machlokas. That unfortunately when adults are arguing, children are inevitably affected, swept up in the fights, right? For me, for boys, so it's Little League and kids sports and parents yelling at the umpire and parents yelling at the coach and parents fighting in the stands. And the poor kid is standing on the mound and just doesn't want to be bothered and just wants to throw a pitch. It's fight. That is the worst. When parents get involved in the fights, the kids just get swallowed up. For girls, I would imagine you guys could probably give better examples than I could. I don't know, what are their fights with birthday parties, bas mitzvahs, I don't know, whatever. But you guys probably understand, when parents are fighting, when adults are fighting, so the kids get brought into it. Rachman al-Tzlan, if there's fighting between spouses, the kids get affected. Right? So if for whatever reason you get into a fight, so and you can't get over, right, can overcome your Yetzirah and your ego, whatever, so maybe just remember what fighting does to the kids. The kids are always affected. But why, more importantly, why are kids punished here? Why were they swallowed up by the ground? So Rav Chaim Shmulevitz writes in Sichos Mutzar, he points out a fascinating Gemara in Sanhedrin, in Daf Ayin Beis. So he says that at the end of the Parsha, at the end of the Torah, in Parsha's Kisisa, the stories of the Ben Sora Mora and the Yefas Torah are back to back. What are those two stories? So the Yefas Torah is the beautiful captive that you're probably familiar with, that if a man goes out to war and he can't control himself, he's allowed to marry, very simply, a non-Jewish woman who's beautiful. And the next thing the Torah says is the story of the Ben Sora Mora, which is basically what's, I guess, poorly translated as the wayward son. The son that rebels, steals meat, steals wine. The Torah says you have to put him to death. Says Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, why are they back to back? But to show that if there's something wrong in the marriage, there's going to be something wrong in the kid. And that midos pass from parent to child. Right? So if there's machlokas in the parents, the children are also going to be balei machlokas. Right? That's because I'll point out that that's why it's called Pirkei Avos. Right? Pirkei Avos talks about what? Ethics of the fathers? What does that mean? Ethics of the fathers. Pirkei Avos does not mean ethics of the fathers. It means Pirkei, right? Chapters. Avos, of fathers. What does it mean, ethics of the fathers? What does that mean? It means that midos are passed from parent to kid. That, well, Pirkei Avos is all about midos. That's what it means. It's passed from parent to kid. So if the parents are rebellious, the kids will be rebellious. So lesson number two is that you will impart your character traits to your kids. Right? If you are an angry person and you don't want your kids to be angry, so you need to fix that now. You can't fix that then. Right? You need to fix that now. Right, before you get married, right, because your traits will pass down to them whether you like it or not. And it's going to happen. So whenever you have kids, at that point, right, you need to work on yourself beforehand if you want to fix what's going on, what's going to be happening with your kids. Okay, now, another, also meaning within the same topic. The Mishnah Perkei Avos says, it draws a parallel, just to, if you want to look it up, it's Perkei Mishnah Yud Zayin, maybe Test Zayin, depending on your version. But basically it says like this, that any machlokas that's l'shem shemayim, that machlokas will work. But a machlokas that's not l'shem shemayim, that's not going to work. That's not going to last. And what's an example of machlokas that's l'shem shemayim? So that's Hillel and Shammai. Right? Based Hillel, Beis Shammai, all the machlokas you see about halacha and Mishnah. What's a machlokas that's not l'shem shemayim? That's the machlokas of, quote, Korach vad v'chol adoso. Korach and his 250 and his chevra. Now, how can you tell the difference between a machlokas that's l'shem shemayim and not l'shem shemayim? Right? People get into fights. It's just true. People have different opinions. People get into fights. Certainly, I don't have to tell you that nowadays. Nowadays, things are crazy. But in general, how can you tell? Right? It's very nice that the Mishnah gives a list, right, an example of machlokas that's l'shem shemayim and machlokas that's not. But how can we tell on a day-to-day basis? After all, Korach himself, right? Rashi quotes it, right? Korach himself pretended to want what's best for Am Yisrael. That's what he was saying to everybody. He said, listen, everything will be better. You'll get this, you'll get that, I'll give you this. How do you know what to do? So, it's nowadays, unfortunately, there is so much machlokas, and we have to really figure out how to kind of weed ourselves away from it, right? Everything is public. Everybody is put on blast, right? You don't have to follow the news to know that this is going on. So there's a fascinating quote in the Chafetz Chaim. Chafetz Chaim writes, unbelievable word, and this is true 100 years ago, and it's certainly true now, that basically, I'm going to pull it up over here, if I can find it. I'm going to try and paraphrase it, right? This is a Chafetz Chaim one that is quoted on that Mishnah, and it's really from his Sefer Chafetz Chaim, but there's a Sefer called Chafetz Chaim on Perkei Avos, so they quote it over there. So he says, I'm just going to paraphrase, I'm reading the Hebrew, but I'll try and turn it into English, right? It pains me very much what's happening. There's so much machlokas in Am Yisrael, right? It happens all the time. Everything is in public, and they print all these flyers and all these newspapers. This one fighting, that one fighting, and it creates a fire that we have never seen before. With the going newspapers and other publications back and forth. This one said that. This one said that. Right. It very much pains me that even in Eretz Yisrael this is happening. Right. And I don't know who allowed them to say Lashon Hara, who permitted them to violate this Isser and create all these machloksim. Basically, he has the whole, it goes on and on, but we don't need to spend time on that. But basically, if that's 200 years ago, it's 1,000 times more today with phones, etc. So we need to figure out, right? Again, there are machloksim that are l'shem shemayim, as the Mishnah says, right? Sometimes things are l'shem shemayim, but how do you figure out whether you need to invest your time in something and figure out the truth or not? Or stay far, far away, which is more often than not. So a couple ways to tell whether the machlokas is l'shem shemayim, it's something that's worth fighting for or not. So Rav Avadya Bar Tanur on the Mishnah says that you can take a look at the objectives. That if it's to discern the truth, like by Shammai and Hillel, like they're trying to figure out what's the truth, what's the emes halacha, so then that's l'shem shemayim. But if the machlokas is, in your estimation, for kavod and power, like the Gemara says, right? On and his wife, and everybody knew that Korach just wanted to be the leader, right? So if it's about more kavod and power and honor, etc., or bringing someone down, which we'll talk about a little bit, so then that's not l'shem shemayim, right? If it's about truth, then that's fine. But if it's about winning, then it's not. Another way you can tell, says Sefer on the Pirkei Avos, called the Mishneh Sachir by Rav Tachtel. He was killed in the Holocaust. Baruch Hashem, like the Ish Kodesh, we have his writings. So he writes that if you look at what happened in the parasha, Moshe tried to appease Korach with words, with arguments, with things that he said back to them. He tried to appease Dasan Naviram, etc. What was Korach's response? Korach didn't respond to anything. Right? Korach says the Mishneh Sachir, Korach knew that Moshe was brilliant and would always beat him in an argument. So he said nothing back. Right? So Korach didn't engage him. All he did was ridicule him. All he made fun. He said, oh, you know, you guys, I'm sure, have heard the examples. If tzitzis is, a beged is entirely blue, does it need treles? If a shul is filled with svarim, does it need a mezuzah? Korach was just belittling him. So that's another way to tell if the machlokas is not l'shem shemayim. If you don't have arguments going back and forth, and one side is just yelling, regardless of which side it is, if one side is yelling, you're a racist. If another side is yelling, you're a snowflake. The yellingis not machlokes lishem shamayim. Right, just to bring modern day terminology into it, right? From both sides, if there's just yelling and there's no actual arguments, so then that's not lishem shamayim. That's not helpful. Finally, Yisachar friend points out to notice the language in the Mishnah. He says, "What is fascinating? What does the Mishnah say?" It says, "What's lishem shamayim? Hillel and Shammai." Right? In Hillel and Shammai, it's two people, Hillel and Shammai, right, fighting with each other, right. And that's Lashem Shemayim, because they're going back and forth. They're bringing arguments back and forth. That could be Lashem Shemayim. But what's the other way? What's the low Lashem Shemayim? Zu machlokes Korech va'adaso. This is the machlokes of Korech and his people. What should it have said? The Mishnah should have said it's machlokes Korech and Moshe. Says her friend, no. When a machlokes is not Lashem Shemayim, when it's all about one side, that's not Lashem Shemayim. Right, Korach's fight was all about Korach. Moshe had nothing to do with anything. Moshe had no business there. He had no interest in the machlokas. If one side thinks it's all about them, that they're the only viewpoint, that they're the only side that's legit, that's not Lashem Shemayim. If that's the only side that's, if one side is looking to appease and one side is looking to run away, right? Like Moshe went to Dasan and Aviram, right? Went to Korach trying to appease them, right? Even though he wasn't the one who started it. If that's what's going on, so then it's not Lashem Shemayim. So then that's shach to run away. Okay, another point that I want to just bring out from the Parsha. Again, we're still talking about, it's still within the idea of Machlokas. Fascinating insight from Rav Asher Weiss. Pazik says, if you're looking it up, or if you're looking up later, listening to the recording or whatever, in Perek Zayin, Pazik Hey. So Moshe says, right, tomorrow you guys are coming, right, to bring Ketores, just to find the Pazik. And he says, Boker, next morning, V'yoda Hashem es asher lo. In the morning, Hashem will let you know who is correct. And it says Rashi over there. Is it Rashi? Okay, I'm not sure if it's Rashi. I don't see it over here. Yes, it is Rashi. He does bring it. He said, Amar lahem Moshe. Moshe said, Gvulos chalak akosh baruch hu be'olamo. He said, Korach, listen, Hashem made rules in this world. Right? You're trying to fight the fact that I'm leading Bnei Israel. Kosh Baruch Hu decides these things. What do you think? Like I figured this out? Kosh Baruch Hu decides things like he made natural rules in the world. Yecholu matam nafok boker le'erev. What, can you just like change morning to night? Right? Ironic that Hashem did stop the sun for Moshe and Yeshua in certain cases, but whatever. Meaning, when he said to Korach, you can change morning into night. Right? So too, meaning this is the same thing. Hashem just told me to be the leader. What do you want from me? Right? Kosh Baruch Hu set up, right, rules of nature. Says Rav Asher Weiss, why did he pick that example? There are many examples of nature that Moshe could have picked. Gravity, weather, natural food, people. Why did he pick, can you pick morning into night? So says Rav Asher Weiss, a beautiful point. Remember the Medrash at the beginning of Bereishis? Right, when Akash Baruch Hu Pazik says that Hashem made Shnei HaMeoros HaGedolim, two equal bright lights, the sun and the moon, one for the day, one for the night. The Medrash says, what happened? You guys are familiar. The moon came to Hashem and said, hey, it's not fair. Right, why should you have two? How can two kings rule in one world? So Hashem said, okay, fine, no problem. You get smaller. And that's what happened to the moon, and that's why the moon reflects the sun. Says Rav Asher Weiss, that's what happens when you complain. Well, you Korach, you're going to come and complain. What, you know what happens to the complainer? When someone complains to Hashem about his lot, you know what Hashem says? Okay, so you can have less. No problem. Right, that's exactly what you're going to end up. That's what Moshe was telling him. And why is this true? Because someone who complains is lacking emunah bitachon. Right, Kosh Baruch Hu gives everybody what they need. Right, we've been talking about emunah bitachon the last couple of weeks, different bits here or there. If a person tries to take revenge, tries to influence something, take matters into your own hands, right? You're trying to manipulate something that someone loses their power or their place or whatever, loses their job. Who do you think gave them the power in the first place? Right? Who do you think gave this person, put this person in a position of authority in the first place? Right? Everything happens for a reason. Akash Baruch Hu, right? The person doesn't stub their toe unless they're Xerim made in Shemayim, right? The Gemara says. So this is that's what Moshe was trying to tell Korach. And this is the Ramban writes, the Igeres Ramban. If you read the Igeres Ramban, should a person be proud of? What is there for a person to have an ego about? Right? Money, intelligence, power, everything's from Akash Baruch Hu. Right? Everything's a gift from Hashem. Says of Melech Biderman, an amazing vort. There is a super weird Gemara in Bava Basra. He doesn't say it's super weird. I say it's super weird, but this is what the Gemara says in Bava Basra. The psukim there are talking about, analyzing psukim about Eov. So Eov says something about that HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes care of the gazelle. What does that mean? So the Gemara says that a gazelle, an ayal, right, an ayal, has a narrow womb so that it's difficult for it to give birth. And when it gives birth, Hashem brings a snake to bite it. The womb opens because of the contraction of the shock of the bite, and that's how it gives birth. And then apparently it's able to resist the poison, obviously, and then it survives. Right? It says the Gemara, if the snake is one moment too early or one moment too late, the birth is too traumatic and the baby gazelle, the baby ayal, dies. Says Rav Melech, fascinating. Think about this from the perspective of a snake. And he says, the Chovos HaLevavos writes in Shar Bitachon, that it's the gazelle, it's an ayal, he's talking about different natures of animals that Hashem did, right? He said the gazelle's nature, the ayal's nature, is to hunt snakes. Right? That's why the Medrash compares Esther, right, to an ayal, to ayal adashachar, right? That's the mizmor, the ayal adashachar, tehillim chav beis, that's Esther, right? Because she was able to hunt and eliminate the snake, right, Haman. So the snake is the enemy of the gazelle. The snake is definitely not here to help the birthing process. Right, he's there to bite the gazelle back. He's there to take revenge, I guess, on the fighting on the gazelle. What's happening when he tries to intervene and try to bite and try to fight and try to get revenge on the gazelle? It's exactly the opposite. He's actually saving the life of the baby gazelle. The truth, if you would just leave them alone and not start a fight and leave it, not bite back and not start the machlokas, as you can imagine the mashal over here, all the gazelles would die out. Says Rav Melech, if you would just keep his mouth shut. Right? And if you got offended, you got upset, someone bothered you, yeah, okay, fine. Just keep your mouth shut. Things will work its way out. Things will work out, eventually. And says Rav Melech, when someone takes revenge, when someone tries to lead a coup, rebellion, or just a machlokas, even a machlokas with friends, right? You think you're getting the upper hand. You think you're taking revenge, you're biting them back, you're getting it, it's amazing, you're getting them back. Kadosh Baruch Hu is in charge of everything. Right? If you had proper emunah bitachon, right? What are you going to fight so that this person loses something out, they lose money, they lose this? Kadosh Baruch Hu, if they're supposed to get it, they're going to get it. Okay, and very often Hashem will give it to them through the exact thing that you tried to do. Right? Again, if the snake would leave the gazelle alone, all the gazelles would die out and the snakes would have no problem. Right? Because they can't give birth and all the babies would die out. But the snake has to get itself, has to insert itself into the situation. It says Rav Melech, that's the same thing with Nakama. That's the same thing with starting a machlokas. Right? That if you just leave it alone, time would pass, wounds will heal, egos get smoothed out. Right? Very often, things will take care of themselves. So it's a very beautiful pshat. Similarly, along the same lines, I forgot where I saw this, but there's a beautiful vort about the end of the parsha. Right? We said at the end of the parsha, Kadosh Baruch Hu reaffirmed the fact that Aharon was the chosen, right, the chosen to be the Kohen Gadol and the Shevet Levi, etc. What happened? Everybody took sticks, and the sticks sprouted flowers and almonds. So I forget where I saw this. I saw this over the weekend because we had last week's parsha, but it was Korach. But it says, what's with the almonds? Right, flowers, I get. Okay, fine. What's with the almonds? So fascinating. Gemara says in Erevin, Daf Chav Ches, that there are two types of almonds in the world. I don't know if this is true, but if the Gemara says it, so I believe it. So one type of almond starts out sweet, and then if you kind of process it, cook it, burn it, whatever, it gets bitter. And another type of almond starts bitter and becomes sweet. And says whoever, I saw this, Sefer, whoever, I apologize to the Gadol who says this, that's the difference between Machlokas and Shalom. Machlokas starts out sweet. Feels good, you get back at somebody, yeah, it's awesome. But at the end, it turns bitter. It just doesn't. It gets worse. Shalom, peace, is the opposite. Maybe at the beginning you were insulted. You had a difficult time. You were slighted, and maybe you're right. And maybe you know it seems like you need to get into an argument, but you hold yourself back. It may be a little painful, right? You to just be quiet when someone insults you, or there's some sort of something happening that if you refrain from machlokas, it's painful at the beginning. But at the end, it's sweet because it doesn't affect anything. I remember instances in my own life where I kind of lashed out at something, and it's awkward to this day. To this day, it is awkward. I remember in shul, I was laning once, and some guy did something that I didn't appreciate, and I still maintain that he was wrong. He was definitely wrong. I remember that the gabbai tried to do something, and he yelled at the gabbai, so I yelled back at him. And to this day, it's awkward when that guy comes into shul. This is 5 years later. Right? And I kind of like just, and it was just so, I mean, now, he was wrong, but I shouldn't have yelled at him in the middle of shul. Right. So, and to this day, 5 years later, it was awkward. That machlokas is sweet at the beginning, but it's bitter at the end. Okay, two more points. Last points, as I see we're winding down over here. One point that's not related to machlokas, which I wanted to mention earlier, but again, it's similar to what we mentioned last week, in that we mentioned that all over the Chumash, we see examples where actions or things are not inherently good or evil. It just depends on the context, right? And what the Torah says about that context, right? We talked about the Ma'apilim, that Bnei Yisrael before the spies came and Hashem said, time to go to Eretz Yisrael. If Bnei Yisrael would have charged into Eretz Yisrael to fight the war, it would have been amazing, right? After Hashem said, you're not going to Eretz Yisrael, right? Now you guys have to stay in the desert, right? There were people who said, all right, you know what? We're in. And they ran up the mountain to fight the war. Exactly the same thing they should have done, let's say, a couple of days ago, and they all got killed, right? So that act of the same action depends on context and depends on what the Torah says about it. So you see that again, another example just mentioned quickly in this week's parsha by the Ketores, right? Ketores, the offering of Ketores, killed 250 people because they decided to bring Ketores. Hashem burned their bodies with fire. Same thing happened in Nodin Avil, perhaps. Ketores was terrible, right? Ketores only should be brought by Aaron HaKohen. Later in the Parsha, there's a plague. Kadosh Baruch Hu is killing Jews, and Aaron takes the Ketores and stops the plague. That's the same offering in the Ketores. The Ketores on one hand stopped the plague, and the Ketores on the other hand killed a bunch of people. It's not the Ketores. It's the context. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, do this. That's good. That's good. That's how we define good versus evil. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, don't do this. That's not good. And that's the only determining factor. It's not the items and the aspects involved. Okay, I always like to point those out. But the last thing I want to do is read for you the last Mishnah in Shas. What's the last Mishnah in Shas? Why am I reading this? Because I was at a bar mitzvah tonight, and the kid, very impressive, made a siyum on Shas Mishnayos. Which means he read all the Mishnayos, all of them, in the Torah, which is very impressive. And he quoted it, and I was like, oh, that's a good call. I should probably mention this. The last Mishnah, first of all, the last Masechta, the last... how do you translate Masechta? I don't even know. The last Masechta, I'm just going to say it. The last Masechta in Shas is something called Uktzin, which talks about, if you need a random topic for discussion, whether the stem of a food affects its Tuma or Tara. Okay, fine. Forget that. The last Mishnah has nothing to do with that. The last Mishnah says, Amar Rabbi Shuben Levi, HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the future, In the next world, we'll give each tzaddik 310 worlds. Shnamar quotes pasuk. Amar Rabbi Shimon Barta Chalafta Lo Matzah Kosh Baruch Hu Kli Machzik Bracha LiYisrael Ella Hashalom. Kosh Baruch Hu, the best kli, the best utensil that contains, that keeps bracha for Am Yisrael, is peace, is shalom. Shnamar Hashem Ozlam Ayitin Hashem Yivrech Hazamav Shalom. Now, what is that? What does that mean? Hashem, the only thing that contains bracha, the best thing that contains bracha is peace. And you see that that's true. That just in your own lives, I'm sure you can think about it. But, you know, they have the phrase, happy wife, happy life. That's true. But when there is shalom, when there is peace, everything is fine. Right? If there is not shalom, if there is fighting in the house, you could be the most wealthy, prestigious, powerful. It does not matter. Right? If there is shalom in a house, or between friends, let's say, or between siblings, whatever it is, you can get through anything. Right? Again, I'm sure you guys can bring examples of this. I don't need to do that. But basically, when there is shalom, shalom is the key. Shalom is crucial to success and happiness and accomplishing in life, both spiritually and physically. And that's what literally the last thing, that's the last mission in the entire Shas. That basically is the Kahati and the Bartanura and other commentaries point out why are we saying this, just Dafka and the Mishnayos, because the Mishnayos are filled with machloksim. Right? And so don't think that the machloksim that you're seeing in all these pages are not Lashem Shemayim. They're all Lashem Shemayim. Right? And they are, that is fine. That is a proper machlokas when you're looking for truth. Right? But don't think that the Chachamim were fighting with each other. Don't think they hated each other. They loved each other. Right? And that is the peace that they had, and that is what the bracha that they had, that they were blessed from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So we should all focus, again, obviously this week, the theme is try and make as much peace as possible, try and run away from machlokas, try and run away from fighting and taking, you know, arguments into our own hands. And Mitzvah Hashem will be zocha to all the bracha in the world that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give us. All right, good to see everybody. Have a great, great Shabbos. And we'll see you next week, Mitzvah Hashem. My pleasure, no problem. Have a great Shabbos. Hey, guys, be good. Yeah, sure, no problem.